If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org. If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
All right, and good Sunday afternoon to you all, princes and princesses of patriotism. Let's get this show rocking and rolling. Sorry for the delay there.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Live from deep in the heart of Texas, this is Soldier of Patriotism. With your host, the renegade Republican, the advocate of Americanism, the conscience of conservatism, the soldier of patriotism himself, Michael B.
And good Sunday afternoon to you all, princes and princesses of patriotism. This is Michael B. It is Sunday, September the 15th, and this is Soldiers of Patriotism. Sorry for the delay there. Had a little computer problems. It's about 4 minutes after the top of the hour. We got a great show lined up today. We're going to have some folks from A Just Cause. Now, this is a very interesting story I think y'all are all going to enjoy hearing about. A Just Cause is an outfit that does several things, but it's gone to bat for six individuals that have been falsely arrested and charged with... Well, let me just read to you like this. Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, and Ethel Lopez are coming onto the show. They're going to discuss a nightmare of a story that involves the wrongful conviction of six business executives that created and developed case investigative lifecycle software for law enforcement and the Department of Homeland Security. These six business executives are now being referred to as the IRP6, and it's five black individuals and one white individual, and they were railroaded by a corrupt prosecutor and a judge. Now, these three individuals, Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, and Ethel Lopez, are going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour to tell us exactly what's going on here. Now, this I've done a little research on this. You can find them at justcause.com. And it's seeking balance and accountability in the judicial process. These folks look like they're doing some good work. You can also find the Free IRP6 website. It's freetheirp6.wix.com website. And you can find more information on there. I suggest you pull it up while we're getting ready for these folks to join us at 3:35. It's going to be a great show. I'm really looking forward to it. And seeing what they've got to see and see what exactly is it that our government's doing. What are they trying to hide? Why did they arrest these folks that were creating software for them? Very interesting story. Something I think that we on the right are accustomed to. And anyway, it's been a busy week. Man, oh, man, it's been a busy, busy week. I want to start off. I want to play this. It's a kind of a funny clip that I found on Facebook, and I really got a big chuckle out of it. I'm not going to describe it to you. I'm going to drop the link in the chat room, but I'm going to go ahead and play the YouTube clip for you. So just hang tight and listen to this.
Hi, I'm Steve.
I'm Irene.
I'm Lisa.
My name is Tom.
I'm a graphic designer.
College freshman.
Stay-at-home mom with a full-time job.
Scholar on social policy and a barista.
And I'm just like you.
I'm an Obama supporter.
I support President Obama.
But the president needs your help.
Our president can't launch into another war without you. And remember, when we voted for him in 2008 and 2012, we promised to support him no matter what.
Together, we can do it.
That's why we here at the Americans for Whatever Barack Obama Wants, Did You Know He's Friends with Jay-Z, have launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund World War III.
And America is dead-ass broke, so our goal is to raise $1.6 trillion on behalf of the U.S. government.
That's where you come in.
Even a small donation would make all the difference.
World War III is a very important, very progressive war that Obama tells me is very important. So it must be.
When I first saw the president speak in 2008 in a YouTube clip posted to my Facebook page, I knew he was going to be right all the time. So I support World War III and IV and any moon war the president may want to start.
I mean, there is no way that he or the cabal of corporate interests, spy agencies, and shadow bankers would tell him what to do would ever mislead us.
The $1.6 trillion that we raise will help create a war that truly puts the liberal in neoliberal. There will be millions of troops, thousands of organic grass-fed bombs, hybrid Prius tanks, rockets controlled by iPads, and drones that play the Lumineers while they attack.
World War III is not going to be like those other Republican wars fought on just 1% of the world. This war is going to be fought in 99% of the world.
It'll be everywhere. Russia, China, Africa, Cincinnati, your favorite brunch spot, the one with those kick-ass ranchero breakfast burritos.
Everywhere.
World War III will also be the most social media-focused war ever. It'll be all over Twitter, Facebook, Vine, Pinterest, and whatever eventually replaces Pinterest. And I mean, just think of all the hilarious gifts we can make of cats reacting to their owners' homes being obliterated.
Lots of shock, but tons of aww.
And come on, guys, how good will Michelle's arms look in sleeveless army fatigues?
We have a lot of great rewards for our donors. If you donate $10 to the World War III Project, you'll get a shout-out on social media.
Hashtag thank you.
A $25 donation will get you a piece of rubble from a war-torn Middle Eastern country kissed by Senator Lindsey Graham.
A $100 donation gets you a day pass to leave your local refugee camp.
You'll probably end up in a refugee camp, but it'll have free Wi-Fi.
And a $10 million donation gets you your own senator for a year.
So please, help us reach our goal of $1.6 trillion so we can make World War III a reality. Why? Because Obama.
Because Obama.
What?
I was pretty big leap in the hole. I thought I was going for that.
Because you rose hot here.
I dropped the link in the chat room to that. You've got to watch the YouTube clip. It's a parody, obviously, but I got to tell you, after everything that's been going on with the poll, an upload clip for a news break that I created a week and a half ago or so that I want to play for y'all here in just a second. But I also found earlier this week, Utano says only capitalism can pull the world out of poverty. That is correct. Look, I'm a big YouTube fan. I've always they sing quite a lot of religious music. In fact, religious rock and roll, Christian type rock and roll. Believe it or not, they do. And I've always been a fan of YouTube. He is quite the lib. But, yeah, indeed. U2's Bono says, only capitalism can pull the world out of poverty. The article, joemiller.us, says, Ireland's Bono, the international superstar of music and philanthropy, has always used his status to bring attention to the world of poverty and illness, which he has done. I mean, the man puts his money where his mouth is. He goes on further to say he played a key role in bringing international relief to Africa as it struggled with the AIDS epidemic. It is said he is responsible for saving millions of lives through his efforts. Known for his philanthropy as much as his creativity in the music field, Bono has drawn together quite a far-flung army of volunteers in his war on poverty and disease. Under his tent, he has brought world leaders, rock stars, soccer moms, evangelicals, all united in goals of making the world a better place. But here lately, Bono has kind of changed from that liberal socialist ideology, kumbaya, let's all hold hands, to this quote here, which is actually from the Bible. Give a man a fish and he will eat for a day. Teach a man to fish and he will eat for a lifetime. Bono, during a speech to students at Georgetown University, declared his altered view on political and economic issues by saying, only capitalism can save the world. Now, that was quite a remarkable step, but absolutely right. The free market always does work, always has worked, always will work. But listen, what do I know, right? Hey, listen, we're coming up on soft break here, and I need to go over something here. If I can get my computer to work with me here and give me what I want, if I can get my mouse over here. Yeah, here we go. There comes a time when good things have to give great things. ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing like Texas Longhorns. Now, obviously I'm from Texas, and they actually grow pretty big, but not that big. But anyway, which is why Michael B. has now his own show. Check out Soldier of Patriotism right here, right now, Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern to 3 p.m. Central, right here on the ConservativeNationMedia.com. But don't be worried. I am the same Michael B. you've come to know and love, and you'll hear even more great interviews and awesome conservative commentary from my very own show. My brother Bing is follows me directly at 6 p.m. Eastern with his new great show, America by Design. So anyway, we'll be right back, folks. It's 15 after the hour. Let's start and make a little bit of money. We'll be right back.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Hey, there he is. How's it going?
I'm having a stroke.
Are you going to shake my hand or what?
I'm having a stroke.
Wow, you're not even moving your arm.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you okay?
I'm having a stroke.
Your face looks weird, too.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you having a seizure or something?
I'm having a stroke.
When someone is having a stroke, they may not be able to say it with words, but their body language will tell you loud and clear.
I'm having a stroke.
You just need to know the sudden signs. Look for FAST, F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. Or S, speech difficulty. Then T, time. Time to call 911 immediately, because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Know the sudden signs. Face, arm, speech, time. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Here at the GED Pep Talk Center, we've got a range of pep talkers standing by. Call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org and find free classes in your area. GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Gotcha.
Russian, yeah. Bringing it in here at 16 after the top of the hour. This is Soldier of Patriotism. I'm Uncle B. The phone number is 718-305-7176. You can find us at conservativenationmedia.com. You can also find us at traditionalamericanmovement.com. Our friends over there at Traditional American Movement, we are the mouthpiece for Traditional American Movement. My good buddy Bing does follow this show at 6 p.m. on our other network. Try to get that link here before too long and drop that in the chat room. So you can join him this evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Bing does a bang-up show with all of our friends from TraditionalAmericanMovement.com, some of whom are here with us today. I always enjoy having these guys and gals over with us. They bring a lot to Conservative Nation Media, Conservative Nation Radio. They always have. They always will. They're good friends of ours, and I love them dearly. It was about a week and a half ago when Obama stood in Europe and allowed. Hey, look, I've got a couple of phone calls on the line here. I need to field them, but because I might want to get them in on this, and I'm hoping one of them's Kurt. I want to get his impressions and Ron, some of those guys. Not since 1979 has our country been so weak in the world as it is now. I was in high school. I was, I think, a sophomore or junior. I just started driving. I guess it was my sophomore year during the whole, the waning years of the Jimmy Carter presidency there in 78, 79. And we were at our lowest point ever in this country, I think, at that point. I wasn't an astute political person then. I was worried about my car, making the money I made at a filling station. For those of you that don't know what a filling station is, that's where we used to have gasoline stations where someone actually checked your oil, washed your windshield, filled your tires up with air, and pumped gas into your car. And that's what I did on after school and on the weekends. I worked at a filling station. And when I wasn't pumping gas, I was working on my 1970 Duster, having to pay for that gasoline that I was putting in my vehicle. We were at the lowest point, I think, in our country's history then. The Iran hostage crisis, 350-some-odd folks, something like that, had been taken captive. We've been at this war with this perfidious ilk of people in the Middle East for well over three decades now. I'm tired of it. I'm done with it. I love George Bush for what he did after 9/11. I didn't like his putting everything on a credit card and big spending. Slept a whole lot better than I sleep right now. Just knowing that people had respect for us while Bush was president, even his father and more especially Ronald Reagan. People knew not to screw with us, and if they did, by golly, we were going to deal with it. Prior to Reagan coming in office, though we had technically won the Vietnam War, and our brothers and sisters that served over there came back, did their duty honorably, came back, we won. We let the left con us into believing we had lost that war. We were at the lowest point ever. Jimmy Carter, that socialist individual, had brought us down to our knees in the world as far as our power goes, the respect. You wouldn't have never thought that it could be worse than it was then, but it is. We find ourselves in a place in the world right now where Putin has taken the lead. Imagine Putin keeping us out of a war. Now look, I think it's bad that 1,500 folks got gassed over there in Syria, but it's a civil war. I could care less about it. Where was John Kerry in 1987 when 5,000 Christian Kurds were gassed by Saddam Hussein? Where were they when we went to war in the 90s? Where were they when we went to war under Bush? Oh, they were there right at first, but then what did they want to throw in our face? I'm sick of the hypocrisy of the people on the left. But I put together a little clip I want to play for y'all right now, and then when we come out of this, I want to get two calls I've got on here. This is what I put together. Contrast Obama from 13 years ago and from 1 week ago.
into the hands of the wrong people. We have been very clear to the Assad regime, but also to other players on the ground, that a red line for us is we start seeing a whole bunch of chemical weapons moving around or being utilized. That would change my calculus. That would change my equation.
Approved. Is a strike needed in order to preserve your credibility for when you set these sort of red lines?
First of all, I didn't set a red line. The world set a red line. That a red line for us is we start seeing a whole bunch of chemical weapons moving around or being utilized. That would change my calculus. That would change my equation.
Set a red line when it ratified that treaty.
A red line for us is we start seeing a whole bunch of chemical weapons moving around or being utilized. That would change my calculus. That would change my equation.
First of all, I didn't set a red line. The world set a red line.
The world set a red line. Congress set a red line. Everybody set a red line but this man, President Obama. Now, I don't know. I don't know what. Well, yeah, I do know what to think of this. How can he possibly look in the eyes of the American public and think that we're so ignorant? We don't get it. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. This has gotten to the point of just absolute absurdity. That this man can sit there with a straight face and look at us and tell us he didn't say something when we know exactly what he said. We've got a red line, he says. This will change the calculus for me if chemical weapons are used, he says. Really, Obama, you think I'm that stupid? I don't get it. The phone number, 718-305-7176. It is Sunday the 15th. This is Soldiers of Patriotism. Like I said, we've got a great, great show coming up today. We're going to have on here shortly, we're going to have on three individuals. We're going to tell about six individuals who have come under the scrutiny of the American justice system. These individuals had developed some software for law enforcement, the Department of Homeland Security. Now they find themselves being prosecuted. So I'm really looking forward to finding out more about this story. Like I said, I've done the research on it. I can look at what's been given by good friend of Liv Hodges, who brought this to my attention and asked me if we could get these folks on the show today. That is Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, and Ethel Lopez. Pardon me. And I believe Olivia's in the chat room. I'm going to drop some links in there, and so that you folks can be pulling this stuff up. The first one I'm going to pull in here is justcause.com. Really great website. These folks. Let me just tell you a little bit about A Just Cause. Seeking Balance and Accountability in the Judicial Process is a volunteer organization that was established in 2005 by a group of concerned citizens who were witness to federal criminal cases that were grossly over-criminalized. After seeing how a case can be misconstrued as criminal, the cause was formed to fight a bit of a fifth in the justice system. So really, I'm looking forward. And then I want to drop another link in here. This is going to tell you a little bit more about the IRP6. The six individuals who are being prosecuted erroneously, from what I can gather. I'm gonna go ahead and we're going to slip into this hard break a little bit. I want to get on to sidetrack here and answer my phone calls. I think we've got our guests coming on. So when we come out of this hard break, we should be coming in with our guest. So see you guys in about 2.5 minutes. Stand tight. We got to make a little money.
Hey liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today, with an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
Wildfires burn millions of acres each year. And each year, wildland firefighters like Fire Chief James Hall battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone.
A single ember that escapes from a wildfire can travel more than a mile. It can ignite and destroy your home, your community, or more. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. But you can do something firefighters can't. You can act now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. You can reduce the risk. Do your part. Go to fireadapted.org.
Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
All right, Sunday afternoon. This is Michael B. here on Soldier of Patriotism on the conservativenationmedia.com. And we got two of our guests that I'm fixing to bring in, Ethel Lopez and Sam Thurman. They're both with justcause.com. I've dropped some links into the room, giving y'all a little bit of information on them. My friend Olivia Hodges, who brought this to my attention and asked if we could get these fine folks from A Just Cause on to talk about overreach from law enforcement in criminalizing and penalizing six individuals. Now, the research that I've done, and I've looked through these websites, and I've dropped both of them in, justcause.com and free the IRP6 at WIC.com. I urge you to go and look. Now, this is six individuals, and look, just to let you know, it's six black individuals and one white individual. I really don't care what color they are, except that we do know that this Justice Department is racist, and it's racist towards everybody. We in the Tea Party and the grassroots conservatives, we know this. They seem to be, I don't know if racist is a good word for it, but they certainly have us nailed. They have our patriot brothers and sisters nailed from the black community who are stepping up and speaking out because of the road this current administration is taking us down. I don't like to do the identity politics thing. I loathe it. But I guess it's worthy to point out the fact that five of these individuals are all business executives who were doing work for law and for Homeland Security. I don't trust him with. So far, Ethel West and Mr. Sam Thurman on with the waiting. But I want to go ahead and Sam, if you don't mind, let's ladies, y'all both have a hot mic. So Ms. Lopez, if I could bring you in first, and I'm going to basically, I don't know what questions to ask. I've been reading up on this. It's all very fresh to me. Olivia and I started talking the other day, and she's given me some homework assignments, and I've looked at them, but it's still new to me. But I'm interested in what's going on in this case. But I'm an anti-big government kind of guy, as you probably have noticed from listening to the beginning of the show. So, Ms. Lopez, with that, please take the floor and defer to Sam at any point, and let's just get this thing going. We've got all the time you guys need. We reach 5 p.m. Central Time. The floor is yours. Joe's yours. Let's what we can do to help you.
Okay, Michael, first let me say this. Thank you for having us on your show. We absolutely do appreciate it. And I also want to tell you, you're breaking up real, real bad. It's maybe because of the weather, so you're going in and out. But what I would like to do, because Sam Thurmond is actually the president of A Just Cause, and Cliff is the brother of one of the IRP6, and they were both at the company and can tell you exactly what took place. So I would prefer it if you would start with them, if that's okay with you. Hello?
Okay, you guys there, I'm sorry about that. My Skype sometimes disconnects. So can y'all hear me now?
Okay, I can hear you now.
I apologize.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Ms. Lopez, I very much Skype. You know, Skype is a weird critter. Sometimes it just goes down and you start getting this sonar sound in your headset. I don't know if that ever happens to y'all, but it happens to us all the time. I do apologize. Ms. Lopez, where did you not hear me? At what point?
Actually, I heard when you asked me to come on to, you know, tell about the case or what have you. But what I was saying to you was I would prefer to give that to Sam Thurmond and Cliff Stewart to talk to you about that.
Okay. In fact, let me answer this phone call here, and I believe this might be Cliff. Cliff, is that you at 3687? Cliff? I think that might be Cliff, but Sam, go ahead. Maybe 3688. Cliff,
come on now.
Okay, all right. We've got Cliff on. Okay, so we've actually got. Sometimes technology is just what it is and doesn't work all the time. But we've got Sam Thurmond, Cliff Stewart, and Elpha Lopez, all three on. You've all three got hot mics. So Ms. Lopez, I think she was. Sam, I think she was turning it over to you. You please take it. Tell us where we're at. I think y'all all heard my introduction before my Skype went out.
Yeah, Michael, thank you for having us on Just Cause and representing the IRP6. And as you indicated, this is a tragic story of how the federal government overcriminalized a debt collection case. And so, you know, for your listeners who haven't had a chance to click on the links that you posted in the chat room yet, we can give you some highlights, and then we'll just kind of, you know, break it out and touch on different key points of the story as related to, you know, how the story got kicked off or how the case got kicked off and then some of the things related to the trial. But, you know, this is a federal court case that, a lot of people may not have heard of, and as you indicated, it's referred to as the IRP6. And folks, you know, may say, well, who are the IRP6? And you kind of touched on it a little bit, Michael. The IRP6 are IT professionals who are currently incarcerated in a federal prison in Colorado, and they were accused and convicted of mail and wire fraud. Now, the IRP6, they are executives, and they had a startup company. The startup company was called IRP Solutions Corporation. Thus, that's where the IRP comes from. So IRP Solutions Corporation was actually started around February of 2003. The purpose for the company was actually to develop software for law enforcement. Now, the flagship software that was being developed was called Case Investigative Lifecycle, and we commonly refer to it as SILC. The acronym is CILC. And so this software was geared toward assisting federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies as they conduct investigations. The prospects for IRP Solutions included the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, and then other major agencies like NYPD, New York Police Department. So, Michael, one thing that's really interesting about this story is that Gary Walker, he's the CEO of IRP Solutions Corporation, and Gary is a software developer, and he was trained to do that. He is a genius over and above the training part of it. And Gary had already developed a software that was for law enforcement investigations. But and it's very fitting that this week is the anniversary of 9/11, which was a tragic event that occurred here in this country. But when 9/11 occurred, one of the things that transpired was that the federal government realized that agencies at the federal, state, and local level could not share information. There was no means by which they could share and collaborate information. It wasn't necessarily that the information related to the terrorists was not available. It was just that they had no way of sharing it. And so Gary made a commitment that he would expand his software to be able to accommodate the needs of the federal government. Now, if you have looked into the 9/11 Commission and the 9/11 Commission report, they mandated basically that an agency be developed and that some things be put in place to allow agencies to be able to do just that as far as sharing information. Out of the tragedy came the Department of Homeland Security. Well, the Department of Homeland Security in the late summer, early fall of 2003 actually reached out to IRP Solutions Corporation, indicated that they had heard that IRP was developing a software that they could use and something that would be fitting for some of the things that they were looking at. IRP flew to Washington, D.C., put on a stellar demo, and the Department of Homeland Security liked what they saw. The Department of Homeland Security began to ask for modifications to the software, and in order to accommodate those requests, IRP Solutions made a conscious decision to engage the services of staffing companies, not just your regular, you know, what they used to call Girl Friday type staffing company, but we're talking staffing companies that specialize in IT professionals, folks who develop software, folks who test software. And when business didn't close as quickly as possible, and the Department of Homeland Security kept saying, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, they even asked for quotes from IRP Solutions. And one of the main quotes that IRP had provided to the Department of Homeland Security was for $100 million. That was just for one module of the software. Again, I'll say that again, $100 million for one module of the software. That's key, Michael, because of the fact that, and I'll take you back to the 9/11 Commission report. One of the things that the 9/11 Commission report called for was to have the capability of tracking informants, or at least managing informants. This module that we're talking about that the Department of Homeland Security was interested in from IRP was the confidential informant module. No one else had that developed. No one else knew how to put it together. Gary Walker, David Banks, Clinton Stewart, Dave Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Demetrius Harper, and I just named off the IRP6. These guys, along with other folks within the company, were able to develop this. As I stated, when business didn't close as quickly as possible, that's when a couple of disgruntled folks basically started making these false accusations against IRP and the IRP6 and the rest of IRP Solutions. And I'll go on and say this, Michael, that Cliff Stewart and myself, we can speak firsthand to these issues because not only are we part of a just cause, but we were actually part of IRP Solutions Corporation. And so, you know, we can speak firsthand to a lot of the issues. In February of 2005, the IRP Solutions found the FBI knocking at the door with a warrant for a search warrant, and they executed a raid. This raid was conducted by 21 armed federal agents on a company at the time that only had about 15 to 18 employees. Now, we'll dive a little bit deeper into, you know, some of the ramifications and some of the way that raid came about. But I'll give Cliff an opportunity to jump in here. But let me just say this one thing, though. As far as the warrant for the raid, there's a rogue FBI agent by the name of John Smith. He got a judge to sign off on this warrant, basically stating that IRP Solutions was purportedly developing software. Basically, he was saying that IRP was a front organization, which there is nothing further from the truth than that. There were actually retired federal agents who were working for IRP as subject matter experts at the time, one specifically by the name of Gary Hilberry. Mr. Hilberry, he actually provided a sworn affidavit that stated that he, along with two other retired federal agents, were in fact working for IRP. They were working for free, and that IRP was a legitimate company. IRP was developing a viable software, and yes, there were customers in the federal government and in other major agencies that the software would be useful for, and that they wanted to stick around because they knew that IRP was going forward. John Smith, FBI agent John Smith, also reached out to agencies in Washington, D.C., and basically, in so many words, hey, you know, we're investigating this company. It was validated that IRP was a legitimate company. So how do you get a judge to sign off on a warrant stating that this is a front organization and that they are purportedly developing software when you already knew that it was legitimate, software was viable? So he got that warrant under false pretenses, and that's when the wheels of injustice started to move. And against some guys who were very patriotic, we'll come back and talk about their patriotism here in a moment, but I want Cliff to talk a little bit about the raid itself.
Well, and Mr. Thurman and Cliff and Ms. Lopez, we're coming up against a soft break. Like terrestrial radio, this is how we make our money is soft breaks and hard breaks. So we're fixing to go into this hard break, I mean this soft break. But Mr. Thurman, I got a federal judge. I just want to recap real quickly before we do the soft break. We come out of it and then hand it over to Mr. Stewart or to Ms. Lopez. A federal judge took the warrant. Is that correct? Am I understanding you correctly? Someone that works for Eric Holder. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. And these guys were developing software. I hear our listeners listening, asking. I can hear them channeling to me. Did this have anything to do or part of anything in the data mining that we've heard about here recently? The guy that, I mean, and not that they're connected to that guy that went to Russia, but this is what that software was for. This was something the government wanted that these gentlemen were developing to help, in this case, to find confident, targeting of informants, confidential of traitor informants. Did I get that correct?
Well, Michael, in this case, you got to go back to 9/11 again, and okay. The fact that there were terrorists. It was obviously the worst terror attack on U.S. soil. And one of the things was that they found out that several agencies had different information about these terrorists. But one agency wasn't speaking to the other, another
exactly.
wasn't speaking to the other. There were bits and pieces of this type of information all over the place. Now, I want to dispel one thing that, you know, that we've kind of heard a little bit, and maybe I don't know if that's where you're kind of leaning toward. This software was not designed for the U.S. government to track U.S. citizens. So that is not what this software was for. This software was for law enforcement investigations. In its purest sense, it would take a case from the crime scene all the way through to the courtroom. So it was a tool whereby investigators show up to the, to a crime scene, and they could actually, you know, take photos of the crime scene, upload them to the to their database, and so forth. And you got to remember, and a lot of law enforcement still works this way, but law enforcement was a paper and pen and paper operation. You have notes written in a notebook. You have photographs that get lost. You get evidence that gets mishandled. You have all these things going on. When you look at the entire software that Gary developed, and it had 18 modules, it allowed law enforcement investigations organizations to conduct everything, even to support the prosecutors, by the way, as they tracked witnesses and so forth. And track is not a good word. I'll say managed. So if you look at it from a case management perspective, it would help to manage investigations, help to manage cases. In this case, this particular module was to help to manage confidential informants. So if someone had some information that they wanted to share with the government and say, hey, I know about this terrorist cell, then it would allow them to handle that information. Did it have the capability to do link analysis and drilling down further? Of course it did. That was part of the module. But as far as this software being developed for the federal government to track U.S. citizens, no, we're on two different planes there.
And that's what I gathered. I just wanted you to qualify that for our listeners. That's what I gathered from my research. So bottom line is these gentlemen developed something that would streamline, after 9/11, streamline tracking of potential terrorists. You know, hey, now here's the question, then we're going to take our soft break. But just real quickly, Mr. Thurman, did the government and I'm sure we'll get to this later in the interview, but it's killing me. I got to know. Did they arrest these gentlemen, put them in jail, and confiscate the software, and they're now using it?
They tried, and they were not successful. They were successful in railroading our friends and the executives, but as far as the software itself, that software is under lock and key, and so they did not confiscate the software. But you know, other parts of this story, Michael, are just going to curl your hair and curl the hair of your listening audience when you hear all of the things that went wrong in this case and all the errors that were committed. And we basically believe that they were not just errors, but they were blatant acts of disregard for the law and disregard for individuals' freedom.
My blood pressure is going up just listening to what you said. I can only imagine what's going to happen by the time that Cliff and Ms. Lopez get on. Let's take this quick soft break. We'll be right back. It's about two minutes tops. I got to get it in to satisfy my advertisers. We'll be right back. You guys hang tight. You're still on the live mic.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
So we've got our neighbor Paul coming over tonight for a barbecue, which is why I prepared a delicious lemon rosemary steak marinade from my special collection of old family recipes. To make sure the steaks are extra, extra, extra tender, I left them marinating out on the counter overnight, just like Nana used to.
Maria may mean well, but without food safety, it never ends well. Always thaw or marinate foods in the refrigerator at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below, or you could make your friends and family really sick. Maria's neighbor Paul didn't think twice about the steak he ate until he was presenting his company's financial forecast to the board. That's when a sudden bout of food poisoning made it explicitly clear that profits were the only thing on the rise.
Oh.
Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov. You'll learn the right steps as Maria does everything wrong. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. At 7 a.m., I shower. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. At 7 a.m., I shower. I start laundry at 8. At 10, we go for a walk. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you.
That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Is 52 minutes after the top of the hour. We have got three great guests on with us today. You've just been listening to Sam Thurman. Folks, if this doesn't make your, as Mr. Thurman said, if this doesn't make your hair stand on end, I need to go get me a chill pill. You guys know how aggravated I get with the government. I'm a Freemason. I'm supposed to be loyal to my government. That's the one part of the obligation I'm struggling with. And I guess I am loyal to the government. It's just not the current administration. This is not what I served for in the 1980s. I didn't pick up a weapon, scan that wall, so that six men who are making, living the American dream, trying to help America after we get attacked on 9/11 to be turned around and get prosecuted by the Eric Holder Justice Department. This just doesn't work for me. The phone number is 718-305-7176. I want you to give us a call. I'm going to get you guys in to talk with these three individuals. We're going to hear more of the story, though. So, Sam, go ahead, take the floor, bring in whomever you want.
Okay, and you know, Michael, I'm glad that you brought up the part about, you know, you putting on a uniform and carrying a weapon and serving in the military. I served in the military as well. I served in the Air Force, and all of these guys were also very patriotic. And you know, that's the other aspect of this story that is just it's over the top. It just really it drives you to that boiling point from the standpoint. And I'll focus in on I'll start off by talking about Gary Walker. As I stated before, Gary was the CEO of IRP. Gary actually had a presidential appointment to the Air Force Academy. Back, several years back, of course. Gary, the only reason he didn't remain at the Air Force Academy was because of the fact that he wanted to fly. His eyesight wouldn't allow him to fly, so he left the Air Force Academy. He still pursued his information technology degree through the University of Colorado, and he has had a stellar career. I mean, but one thing that stands out in my mind about Gary is the fact that, as I stated, I was part of IRP. I was actually vice president of sales and marketing. We went on sales trips together. On a trip to New York City, we stayed in a hotel, and folks can check it out if you want to. It's called the Millennium Hilton. The Millennium Hilton is on the corner of Church and Day, and if you know anything about ground zero of the Twin Towers, that is ground zero of the Twin Towers. We were standing on about the 60th floor of that hotel, looking out the window, and at that time, and this is before the memorial and everything, looking out at ground zero, and all you see is a big hole in the ground. A hole in the ground that if you've been to New York and you've seen how large that block is, you can't fathom that there were two buildings standing there, and now there is nothing that resembles a building other than a hole in the ground. Gary made this statement, and it stuck with me because of the fact that he said, we are doing what we're doing. I am doing what I'm doing in developing the software so that that never happens to this country again. Gary meant every word of what he said. We had a meeting with NYPD. We were walking back from Police One, Police Plaza, which is a few blocks from Ground Zero. We had a retired officer walking with us. We were walking back to the hotel, and this is several blocks away. He said that they saw a jet engine on the ground, several blocks away. He said when they saw that jet engine on the ground, he said we knew we had trouble. And when you look at how far that was from the hotel and to have Gary standing up there and saying, you know, this is why we're doing this. This man gave his life, so to speak, to develop a software that would ensure that the United States would never have to be subjected to that kind of thing again. His wife referred to his computer as his mistress. That's how much time Gary dedicated to this. Every waking moment when Gary wasn't doing some consulting work for other folks, he was working on this software. His wife used to say, well, I guess you're going upstairs to your mistress now. You know, Gary sacrificed time with his son. His son is now 21 years old. His son suffers from seizures, which have intensified as a result of his dad being in prison. I know Gary likes to go out and hiking and so forth. He likes to play golf. He and his son would actually go out and hiking. They take their dog socks and go hiking. They go out and play golf. Gary has been – that's been taken away from him, and yet he was patriotic and standing up for his country, and his country stabs him in the back. David Banks was an air traffic controller, graduated top of his class in the Navy. David was dedicated to his country. He put on the uniform, and then when he got out, he was working for IRP. David was a tenacious businessman. He was going after opportunities, not just going after opportunities for personal gain, but they knew what the software would do for law enforcement. Law enforcement was so far behind. They knew what the software would do for law enforcement. And then at the pinnacle of this whole situation, what law enforcement would do for the Department of Homeland Security and all the agencies that fell under that. Clinton Stewart, he was an Air Force veteran. Clinton handled ComSec, and if anyone who's been in the military know what that means, he had top-secret clearances handling, you know, top-secret communications information. Clinton and the rest of them, there was no scheme going on here. And David Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Demetrius Harper, they were all IT professionals right from the beginning, and they were on board to help to facilitate this thing. They felt the passion as well. They felt the desire. They felt the need for something like this to be rolled out to the country. So, you know, I just kind of took a little side road there, because when you started talking about patriotism, that really gets to me because of the fact, and I'm standing up right now, Michael. I was sitting down at first, and I'm standing up now because this thing just kind of, it gets under your skin when you, these are my friends that are sitting in prison right now. I know what they stood for. And I know that there was, you know, there was no illegal activities going on. There was no conspiracy going on. The conspiracy was a conspiracy of the federal government against them. And it's just sad that the gentlemen who have the solution are sitting in prison, and the government still does not have a solution. We've spent and wasted, we being the federal government, have wasted over $1 billion on trying to come up with something like that. And I'd like to introduce Cliff. And ask Cliff to share a little bit more about the failed initiatives, and then we'll jump on to some of the information about the raid and so forth.
Please, folks, this is Cliff Stewart that's coming on now that Mr. Thurman has just introduced. Cliff?
Hi, thanks, Michael. I appreciate it. When you look at some of these other initiatives that Sam spoke of, that the government, you know, tried to have some of these large agencies, which were competitors of IRP. I mean, you're talking agencies like SAIP, IBM, Motorola, Lockheed Martin. So these prime government contractors. And one of the initiatives that they tried to implement was called a virtual case file back in 2005. This was $425 million of taxpayer money that was squandered, lost, and the government has absolutely no, I mean, nothing in hand for it. Director Mueller of the FBI at that time, he had to stand before Congress to explain, how is it that you spent $425 million of taxpayers' money and you have nothing to show for it? And do you think anybody from SAIC, do you think any of them that basically got that $425 million for free, did any of them get indicted? Are any of them sitting in jail? Did any of them get their lives destroyed and their families broken up? It's guaranteed they didn't. They wrote it off, and then after that, then Lockheed Martin gets another huge chunk of almost $500 million to try to implement this Sentinel project. Well, the Sentinel project, they said, well, we got to roll out something. So they roll out this supposed software, it's pretty much junk. When you read the report about the Sentinel project, they say they rolled it out. Yeah, it's installed. Nobody's using it. They're still using the old system. So they spent almost a $500 million for this system just to sit there in the building, just to be implemented, so that they can't say, well, we didn't squander the money again. But it was squandered because nobody's using it. But then you have the Silk software that's built by RP Solutions, and you have these gentlemen, they're sitting in prison, and they're the ones with the real answers. They're the ones that DHS contacted and said, it looks like you have what we need. We need to see what's going on. So when you look at it and you say, how twisted can the system be that, you know, the people with nothing, with smoke and mirrors, they spend, squander, swindle, whatever word you want to use, the federal government out of $1 billion, nothing happens to them. They still, Lockheed Martin still got several projects worth several billions of dollars. SAIC, the same. All these companies that aren't getting anything accomplished, they're the ones who are rewarded. But the ones with the real solution, they're the ones that get prosecuted and persecuted and are sitting in federal prison for 7 to 11 years for the fact that they were patriotic and wanted to provide something for their country that says, like Sam mentioned, I refuse to watch another 9/11 happen, and I will spend my time and my life ensuring that it doesn't happen again on American soil. And who comes back to attack them for that? No one else but their own government. And it's totally, totally sickening.
Well, Mr. Stewart, let me just make an observation here real quick. And we got to take a hard break, and then we'll 2.5 minutes. I'm sorry. We do have to do our breaks, or otherwise the president of our company, my program director, will put me in radio jail. But the
totally
analogy
understand.
Is, you saw, which was it, the Iron Man 2 or whatever, with the arms guy hammer, whatever.
Right.
And he was going after Tony Stark. They're sitting in a congressional, and I know that this is you know, fiction, but what I'm hearing sounds like, you know, you're talking about some big companies, Lockheed Martin. As I understand Mr. Thurman correctly, some complaints were lodged against these six gentlemen that inspired this federal judge under Eric Holder to prosecute these men and put them in jail. I know maybe you can't or can't elaborate, but was this a hostile sort of situation where other government contracting businesses were upset that these six gentlemen had software that they didn't have the smarts to make, and this is how we find ourselves in this situation?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we look at what happened when DHS reached out to IRP Solutions and said, you have what we need, and Sam can probably elaborate on this more with some actual, you know, more intel details. But the other competitor companies, the Lockheeds, the Bearing Points, and those types, were pointed to IRP Solutions saying, that small business over there in Colorado, they have the real solution. And if you want to get on board with this billion-dollar project, you're going to have to go with them in some kind of way, make a commitment, some type of agreement with them that you're going to be a partner to get their software in here. I mean, IRP, no, was not a prime vendor. It's a small business. And that's another thing that's disgusting. It's like, we have the answer, but now we have to go back to one of these big boys, as they're called, to basically get in to make a sale. So it's a monopoly. It's a good old boys club that says you got to get one of them to carry you through the door. Well, when you're trying to get with one of them, what are they doing? But trying to steal your software. They didn't want to sign any non-disclosure agreements with IRP Solutions that had any meat to them, any teeth. You know, they don't want to sign an agreement that says, hey, if I get caught trying to steal your software, there are going to be legal repercussions. They're like, oh, no, we're not signing that. No, 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 no. We're not going to sign anything like that, but we want you to show us the inner workings of your software. So it's obvious that they're coming in, and we were even told by DHS, they will steal your software, so be careful when you deal with them. So when you ask, hey, was this some competitors that may have pushed this? Absolutely, because you're looking at, as Sam mentioned, this one module being worth $100 million, and with 18 modules, you're talking about $1.8 billion in one sale and one government agency. So one entire sale to DHS could have been worth $1.8 billion. And do you think that the Lockheeds, the IBMs of the world are going to let this small business with 15 to 18 African-Americans down here in this small town of Colorado Springs, do you think they're going to let them put that money on the table and this small business take it? I think they were having a problem with that, and hence the reason that we're in this situation now.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, real quickly, we've got Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, and Miss Ethel Lopez. It's about 7 minutes after the top of the hour. They're from AjustCause.com. We've got a really good discussion going on today. Guys, I'm going to leave you on a hot mic. I just need to take my hard break real quick. We'll be right back, and Cliff, we'll pick it up with you. I want to say one thing, and then we'll go in the direction you guys want to go. This really pisses me off. I mean, look, I said, y'all probably heard it before I brought you guys on, I don't do the identity politics thing. I've moved beyond that. But I do recognize that racism exists, especially in a situation like this. And I don't know, I mean, I'm sure it had something to do with, like you just said, Cliff, six black business executives that have one module, $100 million, and there's 18 of them. My God, this is an incredible fortune they're sitting on. And Lockheed Martin and IBM and those guys, they got no piece of it, folks. There's some shady business going on here. We're going to take about 2 minutes and 40 seconds. We'll be right back. Guys, hang tight, okay?
Will do.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
You're struggling with your mortgage. You think about it. You don't do anything but think about it.
What are we going to do if we lose the house? Where are we going to go?
At work.
I can't let anybody find out. I'm so embarrassed.
At dinner.
How can I tell the kids? It's going to wreck their lives.
And at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get through this. What's going to happen to us?
It's time to stop thinking. It's time to start dialing. Call 1-888-995-HOPE for a free government program that offers expert one-on-one advice about your mortgage options.
I'm all alone.
No, you're not. We've helped over a million homeowners, and we want to help you. And now there are more ways to help. Call 1-888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
All right, this is Soul of the Patriot. It is 11 minutes after the top of the hour. The phone number, 718-305-7176. We're very fortunate today. By the way, you can check us out at conservativenationmedia.com. Folks, I want to direct your attention to itscause.com. We're having a very interesting conversation today with Sam Thurmond, Cliff Stewart, and Ethel Lopez about six gentlemen, six patriots, who after 9/11 developed some software that's called Case Investigative Lifecycle that would help to streamline between the agencies a method for tracking enemies of America. Now, look, in the last 5 years, we've become weaker than we've ever been. The Middle East is on fire. It's ablaze. Al-Qaeda is at its worst. Think what you want about George Bush. Think what you want about Barack Obama, but things have gotten worse. And never at any time in our country's history have we needed six individuals, some of whom are my brothers, that served with me, that carried on, stood that wall, and standed against these perfidious ilk of people that would do us harm here in our country. And our government, under Eric Holder, is going to prosecute these gentlemen, put them in jail, all because of the alleged improprieties by what appears to be competitors. I don't know the whole thing. That's why we're talking to Thurmond, Cliff Stewart, and Ethel Lopez, so that we can get the scoop on this and get the lowdown on this. Something stinks to high hell here. Pardon my French. Something is. I trust this government. I never have. I especially don't trust it under the last 5 years. So I'm not a conspiracy guy. I don't screw my tinfoil hat on too tight. I'm one of those kind of guys that puts this conspiracy stuff on the shelf, and when I hear evidence to pull it off of the shelf and say, okay, there's something to this, then I will. Well, I'm pulling this off the shelf, okay? I'm pulling it off the shelf because something doesn't smell right here, and when the Obama administration is behind it, it smells even worse. With that, I'm going to bring in Mr. Stewart to get us back rolling. We're going to forego the soft break on this. We're just going to go till the bottom of the hour. We'll do our next hard break, and then we're going to skip our soft break at a quarter of the top of the next hour. So we're going to do one more break because I want to give Cliff and Sam and Ethel every single can. We've got to find out what's going on here. Conservative Nation Media is interested. My ears are perked up. This is on my website. A Just Cause is going to be, which incidentally, guys, just I'm a big music freak. I've always thought if I ever had a band, it would be called The Just Cause. But that's another matter. Cliff, go ahead, sir.
Okay, I wanna you know get to a point where you know you were talking about how you really are not you know of a real you know political affiliation like Democrat or you know Republican, and I think this thing has really changed me. I was a Republican. I mean a Democrat. I'm leaning to. I'm saying hey, I'm an independent now because some of the things that we've seen in this, it's like you know. What is going on with our federal government? And then when we reached out, you know, to people who, you know, for myself and a lot of the other people in Just Cause, like, hey, I'm your constituent. I'm the guy who voted for you. I voted Democrat, you know, for some of my senators and stuff like this. And then when I come to you, you don't give me anything. So I'm like, okay, do I need to go over to the Republicans to really get, you know, some type of movement in this, to get some type of traction because you guys are so afraid of whatever it is. I mean, your hands are so deep in the cookie jar of this administration of whatever that you can't help out the people that voted for you. And it really does stink. And just the way, you know, there's different protocols that are set in place for these government agencies. And for the FBI, you know, the way that they do raids and things of that nature, there's a protocol. When they raided IRP Solutions, they came in. Now, there's about 15 to 18 employees there that day, and I was there. They came in with 21 armed agents. Now, you're talking about a more than one-to-one armed agent to employee at a small business. They come in with this show of force. I mean, they're slamming down handcuffs on the desk. I mean, this is in front of the administrative assistant. This isn't guys, you know, saying, hey, these are men that are, you know, maybe armed or something, or they could have a room full of guns or something. No, these are ladies, the administrative assistant. You're slamming down handcuffs, saying, I'll take you to jail. And they come in with this extreme show of force. And we found out that, hey, you know, this is reserved for, like, drug kingpins, gun runners, things of that nature, these hardcore criminals that you put on this show of force to basically suppress the whole situation. Well, this is a business doing software development, and this is how you come in, totally outside of the realms of anything that could be deemed protocol on how you collect what they said they were coming for, financial records. And the troubling part about this is they came in, they show the warrant, They say, we're here for the financial records. Well, Gary Walker and the rest of the executives, they put the file cabinet in the middle of the floor saying that filing cabinet is already labeled financial records. There it is, everything you want, all the paperwork you could be looking for. Make a copy of anything you need. Well, what do? They stay there for over 10 hours. They copy every computer in the entire building. You're talking about from the janitor to the CEO, they copy everything. Data for data, bit for bit, they copy all of it and leave the financial records there when they leave. Never open that filing cabinet, never made a copy of anything in there. And furthermore, they could have gotten copies of that from the staffing companies that were involved. You know, there were business-to-business contracts that were signed with IRP Solutions and these staffing companies. Timesheets were sent, you know, either faxed or email. So if that were the things they were looking for, then why could they have not gotten them from the other staffing companies that were in question? Why could they have not gotten the emails from them, say, these are the email correspondents, we already have those on the other end, why do we need to come in and copy everything off of every computer? The reason is because they were not coming for financial records. They are copying, you know, software servers, you know, the development servers, the test servers. They're trying to copy all of the software, basically trying to steal it from IRP, saying, hey, if we can get this, we can deliver it to who we want to, and we can get paid $100 million. We can get paid $1 billion. And so, you know, they come in, they corral all the African-American employees into the break room and say, you know, they put an armed agent at each door. Say, if you even want to go to the restroom, you're going to be escorted. You're not leaving this room. You're not doing anything unless we give you permission to. Now, if you do that, that's basically you're putting us under arrest, and they should have read us our rights. They should have told us we had the right to an attorney, all these things. None of that was given to us, but we're corralled into one room, basically, you know, under arrest, under an armed guard. It's like, okay, what have we done as just a lay employee that, you know, you come to an IT company and you put us all under arrest? They didn't do that to Enron. At Enron, they went in with three employees to get the financial records, got a box of stuff, and walked out. They didn't have to brandish any weapons or any handcuffs and telling people, you know, you're going to be arrested and all these things. It's totally ridiculous. But they corral us in there. They take all the software. They're asking these racial questions. You know, if a white woman came in here and she wanted a job, would you guys hire her? Well, it wasn't like we didn't have any white employees. At the time, there was more white employees than there were black in the building. And so they do all these things, and it's like, is this what the FBI protocol is? Is this how the Department of Justice has taught their people to conduct a raid? And is this what you guys call fair? And this cannot be the way that you treat everybody. So it's totally out of line, totally uncalled for, and it makes you think, like, okay, as a citizen, am I not worth as much as the next citizen? Why am I being mistreated, for lack of another word? So they come in, they take everything. They leave at, you know, almost 10 o'clock at night. And then when we talked to the FBI's lead counsel up in Denver, Colorado, and he told us, he's like, well, if they went outside anything that was in that search warrant, the whole search warrant is illegal. And so you have from the beginning, when Agent John Smith gets his search warrant off of under false pretenses, saying this is a purported software company, a front company, then they come in, they take things that they should not have, and then we find out afterwards, well, the whole search warrant basically she should be illegal. But then when this information is put in front of this federal judge, Christine Arguello, when it's put in front of her, she just blows it off like, oh, nothing wrong happened here. It's totally disgusting. There's no other word you could use.
Cliff, couple of questions, or Sam, or Ethel, whomever. First of all, let me clarify my again. I know that Sam already told us exactly what were they indicted on. What were the charges that? Because, and the reason I made it is because Cliff, you just said something that really, you know, I've said I don't do the identity politics thing. I just don't do it, but. I try to stay away from it. But what I just heard you say was that the FBI walked in there asking in a complete role reversal, something that just about, I think I almost fell out of my chair. Did I hear you correctly? They came in asking, well, do you hire white people?
Right, exactly. And it's like, well, what are you talking about? First off, whose business is it who I hire? You wouldn't go into an all-Caucasian company and say, hey, you know, if a black guy, Cliff Stewart, came in here and he wanted a job, would you hire him? You wouldn't ask somebody that. You don't know the makeup of the employees in the office. You're the Federal Bureau of Investigation. What are you talking about when it comes down to hiring employees?
I think my jaw would have hit the freaking ground. I mean, are we actually, first of all, I don't even know why that would be a question anyway, whether or not you hire black employees, white employees. I just don't get it. But, I mean, we're actually in this bizarro world.
Right. It's supposed to be America, I thought, last time I looked at, you know, at my identification.
These six were indicted and went to jail for what, though, exactly? Sam or Cliff or Ethel? I want to clarify. I heard you say it earlier, Sam.
Well, Michael, they were accused of mail and wire fraud and conspiracy to commit such. And it basically, you know, and Cliff oftentimes will talk about this from the standpoint of, you know, from a prosecutorial perspective, those are the catch-all. And anyone, you know, that is engaged or involved in law says that if they want to go after someone, mail and wire fraud is what they'll go after, because you can drive a truck through that. And, you know, one thing I'd like to point out, even on that, Michael, you know, aside from the atrocities of the FBI raid, and nothing is minimized in this case. So when I say aside, it doesn't minimize it at all, because everything in this case is, like, ranked right at the top as to top atrocities that can occur in a federal criminal case. There were two grand juries convened for this situation. Now, we had a conversation the other day, Cliff and I and Ethel had a conversation the other day with someone, and the conversation went along the lines of, you know, you lose faith in the system and the system doesn't work and so forth and so on. Yeah, you know, we were naive, I think, and that's one thing that your listeners can gain from this, is that don't be naive to the system, because the system does not work the way you think it works, and it doesn't work the way, you know, like you said, Michael, earlier, when you put on your uniform and you grabbed your weapon, you know, you were defending what you thought was the Constitution and the different things related to law. Well, when in this case, and we've already talked about John Smith and getting a fraudulent search warrant, well, if the system had worked properly, our guys wouldn't be in prison right now, because there was one grand jury. This case was presented to that grand jury. That grand jury looked at it and they said, excuse me, you know, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, but this looks like a debt collection case to us. This looks like a corporate debt collection case. They did not return an indictment. Case closed. Wrong.
And then we had a second grand jury.
They had a second grand jury, Michael. They called a second grand jury. In the first grand jury, they called several witnesses. In the second grand jury, guess who was in the room? Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch and FBI agent Moen, a different agent who was involved in the raid. Only those two people. And say that again, Michael.
I'm sorry about that, Sam. I'm confused. Since when in our and civil court cases did we start having two grand juries? If the first one didn't give us the answer we wanted, we had a second. When did this
if you
want to
railroad somebody, you do it. And that's part of the thing that the Just Cause is pushing for is judicial reforms that when you have rogue FBI agents, well, when you have rogue any federal employee, whether they are an officer of the court, like a prosecutor, a judge, an investigator, when you have folks that are out doing their own thing, running roughshod on against the Constitution, they need to be held accountable. Right now, there is no accountability. Prosecutors and judges, they can do whatever they want to, and they know they can. They can lie in court, and there's nothing to be done about it. We need to hold them accountable. And when you send someone to prison or sentence them to prison for 7 to 11 years, when it is found out and that is reversed, you need to go to prison for 7 to 11 years.
I'm just curious, who was this judge, this federal judge appointed by? Do we know?
This judge was appointed in 2009, I believe. Is that correct, Cliff?
Oh, so they were appointed by Obama.
They
would have been appointed by Obama. This has got all – look, when we first went into this and when I first read it, I read that it was that gentleman, one white gentleman, and I thought, okay, well, I don't understand what the significance is here. But with what Cliff has just told us about the FBI coming in and asking racial questions, I mean, this has got all the hallmarks of a modern-day lynching. And I don't understand why. I'm not getting why, other than we know that Lockheed Martin and some other big defense contractors were somehow or another involved in this. It's got – look, I'm shaking my head to excite my brain right now because, I'm a roast beef. I'm done here. I can't figure out why in the world they've pinpointed these six gentlemen who were trying to develop software to help streamline communication between departments for tracking individuals, and they end up in jail for 11 years.
And you know, Michael,
it makes no sense to me, Sam. It really, I mean. There's something wrong, something in the federal. We've got people that died in Benghazi, and nobody's went to jail for it. And yet these six gentlemen, these patriots, have done this, and they're in jail. I don't get it. I just don't freaking get it.
Well, we you know, you mentioned conspiracy theory and so forth. You know, you at some point. Back previously, you looked at all the stuff going on, and you just saw all the evil that was being transpiring. But then it's like you realize that this is like a conspiracy, and people will say, well, you're just a conspiracy theorist. Well, when you lay it all out, then they begin to say, wow, this sounds like a Bourne ultimatum movie. And I'm looking I have a timeline of different events that occurred. And like we talked about before, when you look at the amount of money that was on the table, and we've kind of found out that this kind of thing happens at a smaller degree, but when you look at the amount of money that's on the table, this was bigger than just driving a small business out of business. This was about getting the people, the brains behind it, the idea man, you know, the dream, the dreamer, the visionary, Gary Walker. Let's get him out of the picture because of the fact that, you know, this guy's too smart. He understands how the system works as far as what the government is looking for, and here we are, these multi-billion-dollar companies out here. We can't figure it out. And one thing, Michael, is back in the fall of 2004. Now, I mentioned earlier that in 2003, IRP was contacted by the Department of Homeland Security. Less than a year or right around a year later, and there was meetings ongoing all the time, but the federal government had what they called an industry day. An industry day is where they bring all of the major defense contractors in and they say, hey, here's our next big RFI or RFP. Here's the next big contract we're looking at. At that time, it was the Federal Information Case Management System that they were looking at, so i.e. the type of software that IRP is developing. What they flashed up on the screen, now they've been talking to IRP for a year now, what they flashed up on the screen all of a sudden it was like, wow, that's the guys with IRP are looking at it, it's like, that's our software. They didn't have it labeled as IRP, but all of the dynamics of it, everything that they were asking for was everything that IRP Solutions and the Case Investigative Lifecycle software would deliver. The Department of Homeland Security even told some of the major defense contractors and some of the players that, hey, to be honest with you, the company that already has this figured out is that small company over there, IRP Solutions. If you want to get a piece of this pie, you better talk to them. I have notes here, Michael, that show when calls were coming in from people like, you know, the public sector division of IBM calling to inquire about partnerships and so forth. HP called. There's another call that came in from SAIC. Gary and David had meetings with Deloitte. I'm throwing out some big names, Michael, because these names are real. These companies are real. These are major defense contractors that were reaching out to this small company, Unisys, EDS at the time, CSC. All these companies were reaching out to IRP because they wanted to get in some sort of teaming agreement with IRP because, as Cliff so accurately stated, you're talking at least $1 billion. And as, you know, the way the government works, obviously that $1 billion was going to turn into $2 billion, into $3 billion. So we're not talking small change here. But there was a small company that had the solution. Now, you tell me that, you know, don't you think that people will go to whatever lengths they have to in order to get people out of the way? And that's not a conspiracy theory. That is when you have the facts and all the other stuff, and we, I know, you know, the clock works against us on these kind of things, but we got to talk about some of the things that happened in trial to show that Judge Arguello was doing everything in her power to ensure that there was a conviction that came down.
Well, let's take this hard break real quick, and we're done with breaks. We'll spend the next 25 minutes. We'll wrap this up. Look, you're talking $1 billion, Mr. Thurman. With $1 billion, Halliburton, Lockheed Martin, I don't care who it is. If you've got something they want, I guess it's the nature of being a pessimist. And I'm a free market guy. I love free market. But we understand what happens when we're talking about $1 billion. If you're six little guys in Colorado that are geniuses and you've just developed, you know, the next Windows of the intelligence world, like Bill Gates did for the death, you're probably putting yourself in a bad position, and
right.
I think we're seeing that. Let's take this hard break. We're done with breaks. We'll come back out of this, and folks, I'm going to end the show today with a video that I found on the Just Cause website. By the way, it's about a 3 minute. We're going to end with that. It's a great little tune. You guys stand right back. Stand by. We'll be right back. 2 minutes 30 seconds.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm place on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy
backwash. I want to be a bike that races around the
when
country.
When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest
when I grow
trail.
Up, I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny
I grow up,
porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a... Oh,
I want to
be
I want to be a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 and 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
All right. I'm sorry, 36 minutes after the top of the hour. This is Michael B. on Soldier of Patriotism at conservativenationmedia.com. We've got on today Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, and Ethel Lopez, whom we've actually not heard from Ms. Lopez yet. I'm hoping we'll get to hear from her and see what she brings to this discussion. They're from a Just Cause, a-justcause.com. We've been talking about six gentlemen who have developed some software, and there was an FBI raid in their offices in 2005, under the Bush administration, actually, although the judge that prosecuted this case was appointed in 2009 underneath Obama, and it was the Eric Holder DOJ that has pursued this. There's something is in this picture that is crazy. When you're talking about $1 billion, folks, you know, that weird things happen. And if you're a little guy like this little company, and you're messing around with, you know, playing up against Lockheed Martin and Hewlett Packard and folks like that, you become a target, just much like we have become a target against the Republican Party, us grassroots conservatives. Because we're a threat. These guys apparently were a threat, and they've pissed somebody off, and somebody's lodged complaints, and they've went to jail for 11 years for mail wire fraud. I don't get this. It something on the federal end has went horribly wrong here to send six good men to jail over mail wire fraud. I mean, we've got a president that bungled Benghazi. Four Americans died. An IRS that has been targeting conservatives. No one's went to jail for any of that. And yet these six gentlemen, here they sit in Colorado in a federal prison. I don't know. Something crazy here. Ed.
And, you know, Michael, one of the things I think that we can focus on as far as where some things went terribly wrong in the trial is if we were to look at the items where that are currently under appeal. And so when you look at there was a Fifth Amendment violation, as a result of that, there's a missing transcript, and we are fighting tooth and nail to try and get this transcript. And by the way, just this past week, Mark Garagos has joined the legal team in the civil lawsuit that we have against the court reporter on that particular part of this case, because once that, and I'll let Cliff share a little bit on that, and then Ethel will jump in there as well, because Ethel shares a lot of good information as far as, you know, how this thing impacts families. And you know, it's you know, these are family men. These are ethical businessmen. These are Christian men. And so, you know, we got to get that in there. But then one of the other items that we talk about or that's under appeal is also the speedy trial. They would not allow expert witnesses to testify, and there was forensic evidence that was compiled that was not allowed to be presented. So, again, let the railroading begin. It's all of these things happened in this trial, let alone the fact that, you know, the judge was so vindictive and so slanted against these guys, it's not even funny. But, Cliff, if you could share a little bit about the Fifth Amendment situation, and then Ethel can jump in there as well.
Okay, Mike, what I would like to do is, you know, back up just a little bit to kind of bring to light how all this came to be. You have these staffing companies that IRP was working with. As Sam, you know, iterated, IRP fell behind in paying bills. So one of the staffing companies, ETI Professionals, one of their executives' name is Susan Holland. Susan Holland made threats to Demetrius Harper about how she had contacts in the federal government. She knew people in high places. She was going to ensure that his company was brought down, his life was going to be brought down, that IRP Solutions was going to be brought down. And so she makes all these threats, you know, because she hasn't gotten paid when she wanted to. And that's understandable, that piece of it, you know, as far as saying, hey, I want to get paid. But, you know, go about it in the right way. But Susan Holland had inroads to Holland & Hart Law Firm up in Denver, Colorado. There is a partner at Holland & Hart named Greg Goldberg. Greg Goldberg was previously an assistant U.S. attorney in Denver, Colorado. He compiles a package, takes it, and hand-delivers it to the prosecutor, assistant U.S. attorney Matthew Kirsch there in Colorado. So you have these web of friends. You say Susan Holland, she's calling in, you know, favors from, you know, either her family's law firm, Holland and Hart, or however that connection is. She gets one of the partners there who used to be assistant U.S. attorney, reaches out to him, and then what he does is he takes that information, sends it to his crony, John Smith, the FBI agent, and says, you know, basically go find me something on these guys so that this favor that I'm getting called in on, I can make good on it. So you look at this connection, this web, this string of individuals that are saying we're going to come together to help bring these men down. And Susan Holland, she stated herself, she has connections in government. So who knows which one of these companies she had inroads to, saying, okay, you know, get us that software, get these guys out the way if you can, so that we can get that business. The even the more eerie and disgusting part of this is that the judge, Christine Arguello, was previously a partner at this Holland & Hart law firm. So you have not only the assistant U.S. attorney involved with this law firm, but you have the judge. And then we find out that U.S. attorney up in Denver, that, you know, appointed by Obama there in Denver, that he used to be at Holland & Hart law firm. So they all used to work together. They're all friends. So how are you going to get justice from these people who are all calling in favors from each other? So it is totally, totally disgusting. And I just wanted to put that out there so that people understand, your listeners understand that, you know, you may think, okay, that, you know, the regular way somebody makes a complaint to the FBI and then it goes up the chain to the assistant U.S. attorney and they do their due diligence and do an investigation. And in this case, that happened because when one of the agencies reached out to the FBI in Denver, the FBI responded saying, this is a civil matter. You should take this up in civil court. This is corporate debt. Deal with it that way. We cannot help you. But when you have friends in high places working together to railroad and bring men down, and, you know, then the judge is involved, you definitely have a serious situation that needs to be dealt with. And when the judge was, you know, was asked, hey, you need to recuse yourself. You're too close. You know all these people. You should not be involved. What's her response? Oh, no, I only knew this Greg Goldberg in passing. Well, Greg Goldberg and Judge Arguello were both up for this judgeship at the same time, and Greg Goldberg makes a statement in the Denver Post saying, well, I know Christine Arguello very well. I think she'd make a good judge. Now, how do you call that? We only know each other in passing, but he knows you well enough to make a personal statement about you in the you know, the biggest paper in the state. And so you say, okay, Judge, why won't you recuse yourself? The law says that there is even an implicit, impropriety. If there's any type of conflict of interest, if it can be implied that there's a conflict of interest, the judge should recuse themselves to ensure that the public does not feel like this judge is in the wrong position. Well, this is more than implicit. This is explicitly you work there. You know the guy who's bringing these things to the table. Why won't you step away? And she basically just disregarded, said, I'm not going to deal with that. You know, motion denied, I'm staying on the case. But then we look at this Fifth Amendment right. What happened is the prosecutor, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, he put on his case in general, said he was going to take about 3 weeks to do it. He finished in 2 weeks, or a week and a half, I'm sorry. At this point, the defense's witnesses, it's like, okay, now we're in a scramble. We need to try to reschedule to get people here. Well, these people are coming from Washington, D.C., New York State, all these places on the East Coast, they've already scheduled for time off on their job. They've scheduled for hotels here for when they're here during the time they're going to testify. They've scheduled their plane tickets. And now it's like, how do you reschedule those on the fly? The judge, instead of understanding that, she reprimands the IRP 6 and says, you're going to get a witness here. The local witnesses that worked at Colorado Bureau of Investigations and the local FBI, when those witnesses when the defense tried to contact those witnesses, then we found out, like, Colin Reese at Colorado Bureau of Investigation, he was at his desk when he was supposed to be in court. He said, okay, well, I'll try to make it if I can. He doesn't show up, and when that's brought to the judge's attention, instead of her getting on the phone with him and saying, look, Mr. Reese, you've been subpoenaed, you either show up in my courtroom or I'll have you arrested for contempt of court, she tells the defense it's your responsibility to get your witness here. That's totally outside the realm and outside the protocol of what her duty is. And then when one of the local FBI agents was trying to be served by the process server, you have another FBI agent that approaches the process server and says, you're not going to serve this FBI agent. It's like, well, I'm just trying to serve him a subpoena. He needs to go to court to speak to this issue. You're not going to serve him. It's not going to happen. When this is brought up in court, in open court, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kerr stands up and tells the judge, oh, yeah, Your Honor, yeah, I've been in touch with this witness. He's on a hunting trip. He won't be able to come to court. Now, if that was you, if that was me that had been in contact with this witness, that is called witness tampering. We would have been arrested and put in jail. Well, the judge just lets that fly. Okay, well, he's not going to make it. Who else you got? Well, then at that point, the defense is like, well, Your Honor, we don't have anybody right now to put on the stand. You have to understand the prosecution closed a week and a half. We need you to give us some leeway. She admonishes them, basically calls a sidebar meeting, and tells them, if you don't get a witness here to get on the stand, I will close your case for you. And a matter of fact, if one of you don't get on the stand right now, since a witness is not available, I'll close this case. So violating their Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination by getting on the stand, you know, having the jury look at it like, okay, well, now you're going to have the prosecutor grilling this guy, and the jury's looking at it like, oh, now it's the possibility that he incriminates himself whether he's guilty or not. And so then what happens when Ken Barnes gets on the stand, at that point, he invokes his Fifth Amendment right, like, I'm not talking to the prosecutor. I'm not going to give him anything. Then, you know, that piece of the transcript that shows where the judge told them that they had to get on the stand, ironically, that piece of the transcript is missing. Oh, it's not there. It's not available. Oh, well, it's been destroyed. Well, it's up to the discretion of the court reporter to give that to you. And every time Judge Arguello, you know, that the guys are saying, hey, make this court reporter give us this transcript. Well, you know, her headphones fell off. Well, it's just missing. You can't get it. And so you have those type of things on the table that just show this judge is not playing referee in this case. This judge is ensuring that the prosecutor has the upper hand to ensure that these guys are convicted.
Hey,
and then you have when expert witness is Andrew Albarelli. He's an executive at Remy Corp here in Denver, Colorado, a staffing company. He was going to get on the stand as an expert witness and basically testify to the way that the guys did business with these staffing companies. Well, he gets on the stand. As soon as he identifies himself as Andrew Albarelli and is trying to, you know, basically be put on as expert witness, the prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, then objects, saying, well, he's not viable as an expert witness, and the judge basically, you know, upholds it, says no, he can't be an expert witness. The reason, well, the defense then give the prosecutor enough time to let them know that he was going to be an expert witness. 3 months prior to the trial, Mr. Albarelli sent a letter to U.S. Attorney John Walsh's office, basically laying it down to him, this is who I am, these are my credentials, this is why I'm going to testify for these guys, this is what I bring to the table, this is the type of witness I'm going to be. And it's not like, you know, Andrew Albarelli is just, you know, just some guy off the street that, you know, he doesn't really know how the process goes and things of that nature. This guy has serious credentials. I'll read you an excerpt of the letter that he wrote. He said, I've been in the staffing business for 15 years now, 12 of which as the Remy Corp's principal executive officer. I've been the president of the staffing industry user group from 2002 through 2007, along with being the co-president of Oracle Mountain States user group from 2003 to 2008. I've been a finalist for Ernst & Young's Entrepreneur of the Year for 2003 and 2004, and I've been honorably discharged from the United States military. I have been a member of the Federal Bureau of Investigation's InfraGuard for almost 9 years, and have assisted the FBI in an investigation of a false network of candidates interviewing with staffing firms. I feel the majority of people are confused as to how the staffing and recruiting firms actually operate, and first wanted to take the time to perhaps explain our business and show you that what transpired in this case, the IRP6 case, is normal operations in the staffing industry. Now, with a witness of this caliber, with these credentials, being able to get on the stand and showing the jury that this is nothing more than a business-to-business relationship, this is a debt collection case, the fact that he's a CEO and he could have spoken to the fact that I write off this type of debt all the time, and if it comes down to it, I do a civil lawsuit to recover any of my losses, and the judge would not let him testify. And
Michael, hey, Cliff, if I can jump in there real quick. And you know, Michael, on that type of situation as well, and you know, in the essence of time, if we can get Ethel in there as well, from the standpoint, Ethel, as the VP of Just Cause, she's reached out to everybody. I mean, Ethel is tenacious when it comes to this kind of thing. She has reached out to everyone as far as trying to, you know, get some additional traction on this. And so, you know, we want to – and we actually are getting some good momentum, but, you know, let's hear from Ethel as far as some of the things that she has encountered with this case as well.
Absolutely. And we are running really short. I want to get you guys back for another 2 hour and a half if we can. We've got a lot more ground to cover. But, yeah, Ethel, come on in here. I'm going to duck out, take a phone call real quick. I'll be right back, so you guys carry it.
Okay. Basically, we've reached out to so many different people. We have a whole group of about 35 or 40 people who are doing social media, the internet, as far as Twitter, as far as emailing. We're doing letters. I mean, everything, Facebook, everything that you can think of, we're out there doing it, and we're reaching out to people. And a few of the ones that we've reached out to who have not done anything or who have told us something and actually going back on what it is that they've told us, John Conyers, Congressman Conyers from Detroit, who actually set up a meeting specifically with myself, and we flew out to meet with him. And he sends out somebody else to meet with us because he can't make the meeting, or he chose not to make the meeting. So that in itself was just absolutely horrible. And then we turn around and fly out to Detroit to meet with him there in his office, and he sits on the other side of the wall and don't even come out and speak. And his chief of staff is coming back to tell us, well, he's eating lunch, but there's just some cases that, you know, some issues that he will take, but yours is not one of them. So we never even had a chance to talk with him about anything. Vernon Jordan, he works with this big Aiken and Gump law firm there in Washington, D.C. We flew out and met with him. He told us we could to talk with him about what we were doing, because what we were talking to these people about is this missing transcript, and we needed somebody to tell us in which direction we should go with that. How do we go about getting this transcript that these gentlemen need in order to get a fair appeals decision? So Vernon Jordan, this big lawyer, he was working with civil rights and everything. When we finally meet him in his office, he tells us what a great job we're doing. What you're doing is exactly what needs to be done. You're doing absolutely correct. You keep on knocking down doors. Your voices are not loud enough. You need to do this. You need to do that. Well, we decided to take him up on what he was saying, and we did that. We went to Senator Bennett's office here in Colorado, up in Denver, and we did a march. It was about 100 people that marched out in front of his office. We have two television stations that are right there, right across the street almost from his office. Not one of these television stations would come out and ask any questions, take any pictures, do anything in reference to this march. Now, in the midst of this march, after Mr. Jordan has told us this is what we need to do, he calls in the middle of the battle and says to me, "What, you guys are just being foolish. What you're doing makes no sense whatsoever. This is," and I'm telling him, "We're doing exactly what you told us to do." Well, he's reneged on absolutely everything that he said to us. And why? That's a good question. We reached out to the NAACP in New York. The acting at the time was Mr. Debo Agdabal, who talked to me and talked to us about the situation and getting a transcript and so forth. We asked for a meeting with him, if we could just come and sit down and talk to you. "Well, no, you can't do that. We're not going to be able to give you any time to talk with us. Well, will you mind looking at our case?" "No, we're not going to be able to do anything with your case." And it comes to find out the reason why they are not going to do anything with their case, because IBM is in their back pocket. IBM is funding their organization. So they're not going to lose IBM's money to come out and help us. That's just not going to happen. We've been knocking on Eric Holder's door every single day. We've called his office every day. I call. The other people in my group with the media team has been calling. We've written letters. We've sent faxes. We do every single thing you can possibly do to reach out to Eric Holder, even on Twitter. No responses whatsoever, nothing. And we're practically on the phone begging, "Could you just please tell him, you know, we just need to talk with him to please get an investigation done down here to find out what has happened with this transcript." He's not answering. The Congressional Black Caucus, well, I don't know what good they're for. I don't know what they're there for, period. Marsha Fudge, I talked to her. I even spoke with her a couple of times at her home. And she told me, "Miss Lopez, we're going to look into it. We're going to look into it." Nothing. She comes back with a letter stating they can't do anything for us. We need to talk to Elijah Cummins. Elijah Cummins, he's not doing anything. I've contacted him on numerous occasions. Absolutely nothing. I mean, these are just some of the people. Then you have Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton. They're so full of crap it's running out of their ears. I don't even know why they are there. I don't know why they call themselves Rev. I have no clue. Sam Thurman talked to Al Sharpton in person and about this situation. He has yet to respond, and that's been, what, 7-8 months ago. Absolutely nothing. They don't care. And John Lewis, he gets up there with this 50th anniversary thing, and he's talking all this stuff about how he marched with Dr. King and how he did this, and there's been so many changes and this type of thing. He won't even answer us. And when the guys go and meet with him, he shows them his office with a view. "This is my office." That's all he's got, an office with a view, and his pockets are being padded with the taxpayers' money to do absolutely nothing, just like the rest of them. And this thing burns me up because it's like you have kids that are involved in this thing. These kids didn't ask to be in these situations. And you have people like the corrupt judge, Christine Arguello, and the rotten prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch. They sit up there on their little high horse as if they are gods, and they're in control of your life, and they can do whatever they want to do. That does not work. They don't take into consideration these people's children. And if they do, tell me, what is it they're thinking? What are they talking about? How is this thing affecting these kids? They're going to school. The other children are asking, "Where's your father? Where's your dad?" Well, a six-year-old child, it's going to hurt his heart to say, "My dad is in prison." He
Ms.
can't
Lopez?
Say that. He's not going to say that. How does the parents deal with it?
If I may jump in, we're fixing to go in record mode, and only the people that are on the line with just as us right at the moment. Can I get you guys real quickly? We got about 30 seconds left. Can I get you guys back next week so we can move forward? There's a lot more we got to discuss. If not next week,
oh yeah, absolutely. We'd love to come back on.
Okay. I will get with Barb, with Miss Olivia. We'll get next Sunday booked. I'll get that booked. It'll be later tonight. We'll get the link out. I want to get you guys back on. We got a lot more to do. We just went into record mode, so it's just us hearing. Great show today. There's so much more we got to talk about.
Absolutely.
All right, Michael, we appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lopez. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Cliff.
Thank you.
This has been Conservative Nation Radio. We're going to get these three folks back. We've got a whole lot more to discuss. God bless America, and let's stand behind a just cause and see what we can do to help get these gentlemen out of the situation that they find themselves in. God bless you three for doing all the work you do. We'll talk to you later this week. Miss Olivia, I'll talk to you a little bit later on this evening.
Okay, thank you, Michael. God bless.
Thank you.
God bless. Bye-bye.